like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and before I go any further, I want to thank Bev Capshaw for hosting the show last week in my absence, playing a terrific array of animal songs. Today, my guest is Amy Sheever, founder and executive director of Second Chance for Pets, a national animal welfare organization that seeks to reduce the number of family pets unnecessarily euthanized because their owners have died or become incapacitated, and those owners hadn't made plans for their ongoing care. The numbers involved in this scenario can be staggering. Upwards of 500,000 pets each year are surrendered to U.S. shelters, according to Second Chance for Pets. The organization aims to help mitigate this by providing information about making plans for lifetime care for pets, and the scope of Second Chance for Pets' efforts is broader than just the owners, also including animal welfare organizations and veterinarians, and has taken the form of handouts and other literature, as well as providing workshops and webinars. In fact, 3 weeks from today, on August 28th, Sheever will lead a webinar entitled Lifetime Care for Pets, Planning for the Possibility that Pets Might Outlive Their Human Companions, as part of Best Friends Animal Society's webinar program. We'll find out more about that webinar, as well as the history, evolution, and mission of Second Chance for Pets when I speak with Amy in a few moments here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Later on in the program, I'll speak with Susan Hartzler, campaign manager for Seven the Dog, who's running for President of the United States. Obviously, Seven wasn't featured in last week's debates. Maybe he should have been. But technically, he's not a Democrat, but rather a member of the Puppy Party. We'll hear about his presidential bid a bit later in the show. Also, on a non-canine note, I should call attention to a bill filed Friday by State Senator Lauren Book that would outlaw decline cats in Florida, except under certain circumstances. Very similar to the bill just signed into law in New York. As we've covered extensively on this show for more than 15 years, the feline declaw procedure amounts to amputating the cat's toes at the last knuckle, causing tremendous pain and significant complications for those cats. So we will watch this piece of legislation very, very carefully. Right now, though, let's get to Amy with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Amy Sheever on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Duncan. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, well, gosh, thanks for coming back. I feel like Second Chance for Pets and Talking Animals go way back together. More than 15 years ago, you were on the show for the first time discussing what was then called the Pet Guardian Pet Trust Program, which, of course, evolved into Second Chance for Pets. So we'll get into all that, including the main mission all these years. But first, I'd like to start out finding a bit more about you. A real through line would seem to be your passion for shelter animals, volunteering at these facilities that house them, but also helping the animals get sprung from the shelters, sometimes directly or so, and as we'll discuss a bit later, keeping, of course, animals out of shelters in the first place by almost any means necessary. So tell me about that. What first got you interested in shelters and shelter animals?
Well, interesting enough, I had moved to California in the 80s, and I was working full-time, and I was looking for a way to get some exercise and meet some people and hang out with dogs, and so I signed up to volunteer at the local animal shelter. And this is before the term no-kill, and this was definitely a high-kill shelter, so it was really eye-opening. It was a long corridor, concrete, with cats on the top and dogs on the bottom, and I basically went there to, you know, try to walk dogs and pet cats. And one of the things I found out very quickly were that people, you know, if they passed away, their loved ones would show up and they'd say, well, here's my dad's dog that's been sitting on his lap for the last 10 years and we don't have space for him, so here you go. And after several of these things would happen, I mean, it was obviously that when one of these animals came into the shelter, they'd, you know, become despondent, they wouldn't eat. And unfortunately, in these high-kill shelters, they would be labeled unadoptable and be some of the first animals to be euthanized. And it was really just disheartening to see these things unfold and trying to figure out what would that solution look like and who can help these people.
We'll obviously delve deeply into that in a moment or two, but I still want to kind of find out a little bit more about you and animals and shelters. So it sounds like, okay, well, you know, I've moved, I'm going to get out and about, I want to meet some people. But was the decision nonetheless to sort of go in the direction of volunteering at a shelter, did that reflect a lifelong passion for animals? When did you first become an animal person? I mean, what did animals, for example, mean to you as a kid?
Yeah, we always had dogs growing up. And when I moved to California, I was in a traveling type of job where I really couldn't have an animal. So that's when I enrolled and helped out at the shelter. And of course, every once in a while, I would sneak a cat or dog into my apartment to foster, which was
nice.
Always an interesting experience. But yeah, I've always loved animals. You know, in our family right now, we have 5 special needs dogs, and they're our children. And you know, I've always had a very special place in my heart for animals. And you know, I seem to get along with, you know, most of my friends are people who have animals that are also their fur children. So it's, you know, it's been a lifelong passion.
Yeah. But it's interesting because I think, I mean, people who volunteer at shelters are, I think, are a singular breed of human and heroic to me on every level. But from what you described, and again, we'll get more into the specific situation that sort of, I think, led to the genesis, at least, of Second Chance for Pets. But working or volunteering, I guess, in a high-kill shelter, for some people, I think that would be just the wear and tear, emotional wear and tear of that would be such that it's like, okay, I love animals. I'm going to put that love or that passion in a slightly different direction because this is getting to me. How did it not get to you?
Oh, it did. I after I left volunteering there and started working on Second Chance, I found other ways to help animals. And it is difficult. You're right. It takes a certain kind of person who's incredibly strong to be able to go through that. Now, the good news is that a lot of shelters now have wonderful programs in place. They have great foster programs. They have transport programs. They have other ways people can volunteer. And the euthanasia rates are dropping significantly because of spay and neuter and all these other great programs. And we have some amazing shelter leaders throughout the country who are setting the bar high and sharing their best practices to help increase the way that shelter animals are living in shelters now. I mean, there's play dates and there's, you know, take the dog out for a day or for a night. People going to shelters on 4th of July and reading to pets in the middle of the night so that they can't deal, you know, pets that can't deal with fireworks. So there, over the last 20 years, there's been some major improvements. Now, are there still problems with euthanasia? Yeah, it's horrible. I mean, this year I've never seen it so bad.
Why this year, especially against the backdrop of the evolution that you just described about how much better and all these kind of innovative, cool programs and some of these really sharp, creative people that are leading shelters and their programs are often being embraced at other shelters in other parts of the country. So why this year?
You know, I think it's a combination of factors. One thing that really disturbs me is those people who think of their animals as disposable and they show up at the holidays and they say, here's my animals, I can't take them anymore. Or you also have the pet owner who says, well, my dog's old, we don't want him anymore, so we'll take a puppy instead. So you see these lines at shelters right before the holidays of all these people who want to surrender their pets because they've become inconvenient. That's a significant problem. You also have people in hoarding situations. I mean, I'm sure you've seen this almost every month. I read horrible stories of people who have taken in 20, 30, 40 animals, and all of a sudden they've either passed away or something's happened, and all these animals go to the shelter. So the shelter directors that are out there are dealing with all kinds of these crises and trying to figure out ways to combat them. And fortunately, like for there's one organization in Arizona, Pima, they have 8,000 animals in foster homes last year.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's all these great programs out there to deal with this and to reduce the number of animals being euthanized, but it's still a really serious problem.
Yeah, but one thing, just not to detour on this too much, but you kind of alluded to it, and then when you mentioned Pima, I mean, sometimes the difference in how things go, really as with any other kind of walk of life, I guess, the person. So Pima has this amazing shelter director, Kristen Auerbach, and she was an innovator in Austin. She's an innovator there. So when someone says, hey, yeah, we have 8,000 animals in foster homes, you think, how is that possible? But if you trace it back, you say, oh, okay, because someone that's really smart, really innovative, and been doing this a long time, that's probably how it happened.
Well, yeah, and you know, 10 years ago, you would have never heard a shelter director say, hey, we need to hire a foster coordinator. Those words didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got all these shelters across the country who now have foster directors, and they're getting trained, and they're learning best practices. And, I mean, it's really, really helping significantly. And shelters are having to, you know, think outside the box on how they can get their animals out of the shelter and or keep them out of the shelter, like with our programs. You know, we want animals not to even go to the shelter to begin with.
Yeah. And so, Amy, do you have the time or resources to, with everything else that you're doing, to still go to some kind of nearby shelter and volunteer? Or what? How does that work for you these days?
So I have a network of several hundred rescue groups that I'm close with, and we provide information to them. We do webinars and workshops. I do certain things in the community to help with the situation. We just purchased a scanner for the fire department so that if a lost animal is found, the finder can bring it to the fire department, get it scanned for a chip, and then, you know, either find the owner or bring it to the shelter. So there's different things that I'm doing, and our volunteers are doing to make an impact. I have 5 dogs, so I don't go and walk other dogs.
Yeah.
Because it's hard enough to get my walks in. But,
for sure.
But there's a lot of other ways that that I'm, you know, participating in the effort. And this past year, I put in probably every weekend volunteering online with the Animal Welfare Dispatch for both of the hurricanes in the Southeast, Campfire, and also the most recent tropical storm in Louisiana. Just helping people with resources and helping them understand how to help animals and to, you know, get the information and the help that they needed.
And that, I guess, brings up another notable change since you first stepped into this world, is how much can and should be and is sort of benefited even by being conducted online, and just what an incredible resource that is for helping people and communicating stuff and getting the word out on one thing or another, or somebody's really in crisis here that, yeah, you might hear about in the old days through some sort of much more rickety network, but the minute it's online, it's like, wow, 2 seconds later, everybody knows.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as an example, there were, you know, a significant number of people who passed away in the campfire in Northern California last November. And a lot of these animals were not microchipped, and they ended up in 11 different locations. And so you had people online from all over the world that would go and look at photos of these animals in shelters and the photos of people who were posting missing animals and matching them. And there's been at least 200 matches, and they're still matching missing pets that are in shelters with owners or people who were relatives of some of the people who passed away. So it's amazing what online does between matching animals, between finding homes for animals. And I think, you know, with this topic too, is the awareness of seeing the animals that are posted on a daily basis of, you know, animals from people who've passed away or have gone to nursing homes and suddenly need a home because their owner can no longer provide care for them.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Amy Shever, founder of Second Chance for Pets, which urges pet owners to make plans for their animals' long-term care. If you'd like to ask Amy a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. So yeah, let's really dive more deeply into Second Chance for Pets. So when you're talking about kind of those early days of volunteering at the Hike Hill shelter and talking about situations where the owner passed away, something happened, whatever, and that somehow or another the animal ended up at the shelter. And at that kind of shelter, they didn't have much time, it sounds like, to have a relative or somebody else retrieve them. So lots of cats and dogs, I guess, were lost in that process. So is that kind of where the idea started to percolate, or what did lead to the initial idea for what we now know of Second Chance for
Pets?
Well,
I kind of, you know, I kept these instances in my head, and then it was not until September 11th or 9/11 when I was reading the stories after 9/11 about 800 people and pet owners actually who had passed away, and there was this effort from the local shelters and rescues to go find these animals that were stuck in apartments and, you know, living without their owners and make sure that they found them new homes. And it was that moment that I thought, well, this is not just an issue for somebody who's older. I mean, this issue of animals outliving their owners could happen to anybody at any age. And so I started looking into what resources were available, and I found that there really wasn't anything that helped people plan for the possibility that their pets might outlive them. So I started talking to a lot of different organizations and decided that coming up with an advocacy organization where we could be the resource that has all these different types of options and programs and forms and ways that can help other people to make sure that they understand how they can plan for their pets and what is most important in planning for their pets was really, you know, the solution to all this. And, you know, a lot of organizations, veterinarians and estate planners, and I work with the pet sitter organizations and animal welfare groups, just getting them to have our information and have our resources on hand is so helpful. I mean, they already get it. They know this is a big problem. So just helping them help other pet owners is, you know, where we can make the most impact.
And also, I guess 9/11 was obviously a huge, horrible example, but that sounds like that, along with your other experiences that you saw more individually at the shelter, kind of really sort of ultimately, I guess, created that light bulb moment. It's like, hey, something needs to be done, because whether it's just someone down the street and just something happened and they unfortunately passed away, or the huge number of victims from 9/11, in any number of scenarios, including those, but others too, people, yeah, don't think in those terms. And even, as I think we've talked about in past conversations, even something is not that hard to fathom, if some of these other things might be initially, especially if you're younger, you never think anything's bad going to happen to you. But if you get some years on you, let me tell you, you do think it differently. but you know, you could just be driving down the street and somebody blows a stop sign and rams into you, and hope you're fine. I mean, you survived, but you're in the hospital, and your cat or dog, or multiple cats or dogs or whatever, back home, nobody's there right now, and maybe you happen to live just with the cats and dogs, so then what? So again, I think that's another thing that the whole Second Chance for Pets thing is designed to address, so that somebody is quickly and temporarily incapacitated. Those animals aren't just left to fend for themselves, and then, oh God, no, what knows happens after that.
Yeah, so the most important thing I tell people, because we have all kinds of information, so, you know, for some people it could be overwhelming, all the different options, but our mantra is have a caregiver. Make sure that you have one person that who is completely committed to taking over the care of your pets if anything happens to you. And as easy as that sounds, it's not always that easy, especially if you have special needs pets or if you have a house full of cats. But, you know, having that person who you've had a conversation with and they say, absolutely, if anything should happen to you, I will take over the care of your pet. 'Cause one of the issues is I talk to people and they say, yeah, my sister Jane is going to take my animals, or my daughter Susan. Well, have you talked to them about this? Are they willing to do this? You know, chances are a lot of people don't want to step out of their comfort zone and have that conversation, but it's so important that they do.
So, Amy, that might bring me to something I was going to get into later, but this might be the exact moment, is I know that among the various efforts that Second Chance for Pets makes in sort of helping educate people just about the kind of things that could happen if, God forbid, something happened to you and therefore you're the animals you have at home. And one of those things is just the awareness, but also the educating and there's all kinds of literature and forms. So let's talk a little bit about paperwork, because as the example you gave, it's like, yeah, well, Jane or Susan or whatever said they would do it. But how critical is it from your standpoint to make something more formal and get something in writing that really kind of lays out what those expectations are for both sides?
Well, in an ideal world, every pet owner would have a pet trust or an estate plan, but we don't live in that world. And less than 20% of Americans are ever going to do an estate plan. So I always encourage people, you know, again, you know, having that caregiver, you can document this information and your backup caregivers on your microchip database, and organizations like Found Animals will do it for free for the lifetime. We have what are called emergency card door hangers. You write down all your backup caregivers and put that on your door. So, you know, if something ever should happen to you, or your house catches on fire and someone comes in and gets all your pets, that information is written down. We also have a document, pet care instructions workbook, that you can download on our from our website, and you can document all your care instructions on that form. We also have another form on our website, a wallet card. You can fill that out with your information about your backup caregivers, carry that in your wallet. I highly recommend an estate plan, though, for anybody who has special needs pets, who have pets that require any kind of, you know, medications. It's a good plan for people who truly care about their animals. And one tip about finding an estate planner, I mean, it's not always that easy to find an estate planner who understands how important it is to include and incorporate pets into an estate plan. Talk to people who love their pets, and find an estate planner who loves their pets just like you do. They'll get it, and they will help you make sure that, you know, all your instructions are outlined, that you have the right caregivers in place, that you've covered, you know, all the specific instructions for your pets. But that's really, really important to do, even though I know a lot of people won't get around to it.
I'm glad you said that, because I'm somewhat chagrined to admit that many years ago, after one of our conversations on the air, I guess I did download a packet. Somehow or another, I ended up with, I think, some of the forms that you're alluding to. And I had trouble, frankly, filling it all out, completing it all, just because it was super detailed, as it should be. But, I mean, it is a version of estate planning, and so those things really need to be highly specific. And again, if you've got an older cat and or a cat or a dog or animal with special needs, that has a whole other set of specifics that requires. So in some ways, maybe I'm just reading into this because I felt, you know, crummy then and sort of feel crummy now talking about it. But it sounds like with the door hangers and others, there's maybe a broader array of steps that people can take, so that even if they don't have a super detailed estate plan for their pet, there still are things that can help in a certain situation to ensure that those animals are cared for.
Yeah, absolutely. When you think about it, you know, our pets can't talk. So if you want your pet...
You can't say that on a show called Talking Animals. Are you kidding me?
I take that back.
Okay.
Well, they can't text, that's for sure.
Okay, that I'll go with. Okay.
But, you know, if you think about it, in, you know, we don't want to think about what would happen to our pets if anything, you know, should happen to us, but you want them to continue to have that same wonderful life that you're giving them now. So having the instructions written down is just peace of mind. It's just making sure that, you know, everybody has that information. Give it to your dog walkers, give it to your pet sitters, and keep it updated. I mean, you know, we change foods on our pets, our pets change medications, you know, all those things are important. But I think people who go through the steps and document their care instructions understand that, wow, this, you know, was really helpful. And if anything were to happen, even if it was an emergency situation and they ended up in the hospital, like you said, someone could take that information and go, wow, I need to, you know, here's the times that I need to give medication or food, or here's the pillow that the dog uses during the lightning storm. You know, all of those things are going to be helpful to making sure the pets will be cared for. And having that, you know, the caregiver back, you know, the phone numbers for the backup caregivers, phone numbers for the emergency vet, having all those written down so that people can find them and take care of the pet if that should ever become necessary is, you know, just incredibly helpful.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And it sounds like that any steps you can take in that direction, even if for one reason or another, you're just not capable of executing a complete estate plan for your animals, anything that gives any information is helpful and one thing or another that may come up. And again, I mean, no one should be glib about who's going to care for their animals given some unforeseen illness or accident or worse. So, yeah, I think just keeping people posted, like you say, I mean, food changes, meds change. So as long as whoever's getting at least some basic information, that is kept current on that. And the door hanger sounds like a great idea. And on a related note, Don Goldstein, who's our longtime Greyhound correspondent, just wrote in by email saying, putting a sticker on your front window indicating to fire and other first responders that there are, and in his case, four dogs present, can be really helpful. And those stickers are available at most pet stores or online. So that's another measure kind of coming from a slightly different angle.
Yeah, and that's a really good idea, too. We have barking dogs, posted on our front door. So I think hopefully that'll get the picture. But
yeah,
all these things, help. And I think, for those people who download our workbook from the front page of the website, at least start thinking about what are those different types of things that you want to make sure will help your pets. And I mean, I know there's a lot of different details, but there's some people who adamantly want to make sure that if something happens, that who's going to make the decision to help euthanize that pet? Is that pet going to be cremated or buried? I mean, all those things have to be thought out in advance, as well as, defining the caregivers. And for people who don't have caregivers, what are the other options? Are you going to will your pet to a sanctuary or a perpetual care program? If you're going to do that, then you can't, that has to happen while you're alive.
Not to mention, in some of those scenarios, there has to be, I guess I would think, at least a certain amount of funds earmarked, because some of those places might be in a position to take care of the medical and food costs, but some of them might say, okay, we're happy to look after Fluffy or Rover or whoever, but we couldn't do it without some financial support for the food and meds and whatever else that might come up, vet bills, etc. So, again, it really does, if you don't want people making those kinds of decisions for you, it might seem like it's totally in the abstract, totally hypothetical right now, but as we've already kind of noted here, sometimes it's not. And then if you haven't expressed your wishes or put them in writing or let people know in some form or another, decisions have to be made without being able to consult you.
Yeah, and just going back to the cost for perpetual care programs alone, there are several veterinary schools that have these, as well as sanctuaries that have these in place. And you do have to have in your estate plan somewhere between $20,000 and $200,000 set aside in order for your animal to qualify to go to these programs. You're thinking, why $200,000? Well, guess what? Horses live a very long time. If you need to have your horses go somewhere to a sanctuary or a perpetual care program.
Yeah.
Birds. Or you have a bird that's going to live 80 years.
Yeah, it's the first thought that popped in.
A year on that bird.
Yeah, no kidding. By the way, we should mention, since you've alluded to the website a few times, that the website is Second Chance for Pets, but second is the numeral 2, ND, and then chance, and then 4, the numeral 4, pets. So it's second with the 2 numeral and 4 with the numeral 4. So secondchanceforpets.org. And so all this information that we're talking about in the forums and the literature are all available at that website, so people can.
And we will ship. We ship all of our materials to Meals on Wheels groups, to veterinarians, to animal welfare groups all across the country. And this past year, we created a disaster checklist card. So I think I've got about 15,000 in boxes right now.
Wow.
So people just send us an email and say, hey, our vet clinic wants to hand those out, and we ship them to them. So that's one way to create awareness and make sure people are planning in advance.
Now, Amy, is that partly a product of the kind of work you yourself have done individually, volunteering, and at least online in other cases, for people that have gone through fires and storms and other emergencies like that?
Well, it all ties together because, we're trying to get people to think about these emergency situations. And, I know I've said this, sounding like a broken record, but, having those caregivers is so important. And so when people are planning for emergencies, if you're in California and there's an earthquake, you don't have time. You need to really plan in advance, whereas us in Florida, we've got 5 days to plan for hurricanes, right?
Yeah, so they say, yeah.
But, having your emergency kit, knowing where to go, we just saw in Louisiana, there's still not enough places for people to bring their pets. And for the shelters that do take animals and their people, you have to have your forms, you have to have proof of vaccines. I mean, you can't just do this in 5 minutes and rush out the door.
Yeah.
You have to be thinking about this stuff in advance.
Well, that's, again, part of the fundamental efforts of Second Chance for Pets, is like having these kind of conversations and other forms of just building awareness and having people think about things that could be innocently forgiven for not really thinking about until a conversation like this happens. And you think, yeah, well, I'm young, I'm healthy, what's to worry about? But there's storms, there's getting hit by a car, there's any number of things that could at least temporarily alter your ability to care for your animals. So with that in mind, you want to make sure there are contingencies to handle that. So let me let people know again, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Amy Sheever, founder and executive director of Second Chance for Pets, which encourages pet owners to make plans for their animals' long-term care, as we're discussing. If you'd like to join the conversation, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. And we've heard from don't know if I can read all this, but it sounds like we've heard from Nicole, who's an estate planner, been that for the last 18 years. And she says, I encourage everyone to get a pet trust or two, at least included in their last will and testament. And I guess in her own work, she, being an animal person, she gives a discount for preparing such a thing. So we don't have necessarily contact information at the moment, but maybe we'll get it. And if so, I'll include it with the archive and the show synopsis of the show when that gets posted in a couple days on talkinganimals.net. So Amy, we've got the literature, we've talked about the cards, the forms. What are some other means that you or your volunteers at Second Chance for Pets implement to help get the word out and get people sort of not only thinking about this stuff, but doing something after having thought about it?
So we do have on our website, we're working on updating it now, we have lists of the sanctuaries and perpetual care programs. We just updated a perpetual care program list with all the organizations, well, the ones that we know of, who you can make arrangements with, and they will take your pets if something should happen to you. Now, you also have to think about transportation. If you're wheeling your pets to a sanctuary and it's 2 or 3 hours away, again, you have to think about, okay, who is my trustee going to arrange all this? And have I had a conversation with the trustee to make sure that that is going to happen? But yeah, our volunteers, we've had some of the same volunteers since 2003, and they do this great job with researching and updating the information on our website and helping line up the webinars and workshop. I do want to say one more thing that I haven't mentioned yet is, in addition to the caregivers and the instructions, you know, having that finance plan in place is important. And that doesn't mean you have to set aside a bunch of money, but if you have a life insurance policy, and that's tied to a human beneficiary, you can make sure that that human beneficiary understands how important it is for your pets to be cared for in case of, you know, you ending up at a nursing home or passing away. So, you know, having, that's another piece to plan, but a lot of people do have life insurance policies. It's just a matter of having that conversation with the beneficiary to make sure that those things are going to happen.
Right. Okay. Well, again, these are so much food for thought here. And so let's talk, we were sort of in our final few minutes here, Amy. So let's talk about webinars, which again, as we talked about earlier, things online are so great and effective in so many ways. So I know part of what Second Chance for Pets, and maybe you in particular, offer in that way of getting the word out and helping people sort out the needs that they might have and what to do about them, are webinars. So I'm going to just talk about them generally, and then we'll talk more about the one I mentioned at the top of the show that's that you're doing in about 3 weeks' time.
In addition to, we do webinars, we've spoken at many vet conferences and animal welfare conferences and aging conferences, but, you know, being a small grassroots all-volunteer group, organization, you know, if we're trying to save 500,000 pets a year, we can't do it alone. So when we go out and we educate other organizations on what are things that they can do to create awareness, to make sure that in their communities, people understand how to plan for their pets, you know, that they have our resources, they have our tools. We work with a number of animal rescue groups who have taken our presentation and gone to a senior center, and they go step by step on, you know, here's some of the things you can do to make sure that your pets will always be cared for. So that's a really important part of our program, is to help other people be our soldiers out there.
Yeah.
and, you know, help create the awareness and help provide the education and resources. Because, you know, we go to these vet conferences all over the country, and veterinarians come up to us and they say, yeah, well, you know, we've taken in all these animals who, you know, the owners have passed away, and we've been taking care of their pets since they were puppies and kittens. We can't just turn them over to a shelter, so they live at the vet clinic. So it helped in so many different ways to educate them. And a lot of veterinarians now, you know, for years have been asking us every year, send me more brochures, send me more information, because they are now including this as part of their conversation during wellness visits. So it is becoming a topic of conversation, and the good news is people know how to talk about it.
No, that's great. It must be really gratifying to see over the arc of, even before you started Second Chance for Pets, but especially over its years in existence, how much that shift has happened, and what you just described with vets doing now versus when you first started to kind of raise these things and started first going to their conferences and conventions.
Well, it sure beats trying to foster dogs, because I kept all the dogs I was supposed to foster.
Yeah. Something tells me you're a classic foster fail person. But,
oh, I'm the worst.
Yeah, only in the, yeah. So we have just maybe a minute or so left, Amy. So let's talk about the specific webinar coming up 3 weeks from today, August 28th, as part of Best Friends Animal Society's webinar program. So tell us a little bit about what it's going to cover and how people could access it.
So the target audience is rescue groups and shelter groups. Mm-hmm. Best Friends does an amazing job on, they have a wonderful network, and they provide resources and best practices and education to these organizations. And so our role for the webinar is to introduce the shelters and rescues to this topic, all the different resources that are available, how they can take this information and communicate back to pet adopters, to their fosters, to people in their community. They can understand how to use our resources. And we also, just very basic, when someone's adopting a pet, we tell shelters and rescues, ask them up front, if something happens to you, who's going to take over the care of your pets? Now, chances are, you know, the adopter probably doesn't know. Get them to think about this. And then when the timing is right, is, you know, hand over the resources and follow up with them and make sure that they have a plan. Because the last thing you want as a shelter is for someone to pass away and then you get all their dogs back or all their cats.
Yeah.
So, you know, by keeping the animals out of the shelter, then that really helps the shelter. Same for rescues, because all the rescues are full. I mean, every foster has animals. So it's a tough position to be in, but if we can help them, you know, make these plans and help them be in a better position so that their entire community and fosters, you know, have plans in place, then it's just better off for the pets in the long run and gives people peace of mind.
For sure. So, Amy, could just regular folks connect with this webinar besides the, in addition to the intended audience that you've described?
So I will be posting the link to register on our Facebook page.
Okay.
And then Best Friends will be posting it as well.
Okay.
They can register. There's going to be an option for partners and an option for non-partners, so they could register as a non-partner. But we will be doing other types of webinars throughout the year. I've done them for the Gray Muzzle Foundation, and that was specifically targeted to pet owners. So those will be coming up. If people, you know, follow our Facebook page, then they will get alerts to the upcoming webinars and upcoming conferences and other ways that, you know, our volunteers will be out and getting the message out. And, you know, they can email us to get information if they'd like us to send information to them, or they can't find something on our website and they need our help. I mean, chances are, you know, we've been around since 2003. We've already written about it.
Yeah.
We already have a newsletter about it.
So we're just about out of time, Amy. So why don't you give us that email address, and so in case somebody does want to take that option.
Yeah, absolutely. So the email is info@secondchanceforpets.org.
And again, second and four are both the numerals. Just says secondchanceforpets.org is the website address to find much more of this information and the forums and all kinds of great stuff. So, Amy, we have just about reached the end of our time, but thank you once again joining us on Talking Animals, and lots of great information. And I think it got a lot of people probably thinking and saying, okay, well, we've got to take some steps here. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Have a great day.
You too. In a few moments, I'll talk with Susan Hartzler, campaign manager for Seven the Dog, canine candidate for President of the United States. His bid for the presidency has been included in a Los Angeles Times roundup of numerous individuals, mostly long shots, I think it's fair to say, who have filed papers to run for president. Right now, though, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner. I recently returned to the Just for Laughs International Comedy Festival in Montreal after a long hiatus. And one of my favorite acts there this year, who consistently destroyed, was Donnell Rawlings. Turns out he doesn't have much animal material, but I did find this older piece, so I thought we'd give that a whirl. It's a portion of Wild Whale from Donnell Rawlings in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
We got a wild whale that's killing people in SeaWorld. That's not funny, but the headlines were funny. Killer whale kills. What the hell you think a killer whale gonna do? If you go to Brooklyn and somebody named Killer Mike, you don't think he's gonna give you no roses. I gotta get the hell out. Killer Mike is at the blocks, right? And that whale wasn't a regular whale, he was a notorious whale. He killed two people before he got to SeaWorld. Now white people gotta find something else to save. White people used to love save whales. Save the whales. We gotta save the whales. Once that whale killed that white, that whale turned into a pit bull. Like, get this goddamn whale out of here. God. Damn O.J. Simpson whale, get out of here. The whale killed two people before he got there. That's why I thought he might have been a white whale. Because only a white whale can kill two people and just get a transfer. Willie, we're going to have to move you down to SeaWorld. You're too hot up here. He killed you. And he's in danger, so he was cocky about it. He's like, y'all can't do that. I'm in danger, bitch. You know you can't do nothing to him. You can't kill him because he's in danger. And you can't put him back in the wild, the ocean, because he don't know how. He grew up in captivity. He don't know how to survive and eat on his own. He used to doing tricks, and he would never make it in the Pacific Ocean. Them whales be laughing. They out there hunting like Jaws, dun, 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 dun. And he out there doing tricks. Like, what's wrong with this dude? We kill people out here, man.
All right, that was Donnell Rawlings with part of a piece called Wild Whale, taken from his album From Ashy to Classy. Now let's speak to Susan Hartzler, under-the-radar political operative running the presidential campaign of Seven the Dog. This is Susan Hartzler on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thanks for inviting us.
You bet. So let's find out a little bit about the Seven generally, and then we'll, of course, find out a few details about this presidential bid.
Okay. Well, Seven was a former show dog, and I got him at about 10 months old, and he's an Australian Shepherd, a beautiful, beautiful dog.
Yeah.
And he's a therapy dog. He visits kids. He's now the official therapy dog for the Oxnard High School District.
Oh, wow.
So he's got a lot of fans there.
Yeah.
And he's, being an Australian Shepherd, he's really smart.
Sure.
And he's a herding dog. So I thought someone like him could bring America together again. Use his herding skills to bring America together.
Well, that makes sense to me. I mean, he may or may not be immediately disqualified by virtue of being super smart, because we don't really go in for that kind of thing in our president, it seems like, at the moment at least. So, okay, so with the herding idea, I guess, was that the impetus for sort of saying, hey, let's have Seven run for president, or what else maybe was behind the decision?
Well, I'm a CNN junkie here. I've admitted it.
Okay.
And I've just been pretty upset about what's been going on with our government. And it all started with me. The goal is really to use his therapy dog skills in Washington, D.C. So bring him to Washington to get our leaders working together to get good stuff for the country happening. And I think everybody could use a little therapy dog love.
For sure.
So from that, I decided to make him a presidential candidate. There's not a lot of, besides the money you have to make, which he's not doing.
Yeah.
He's making money for dog rescue. But, you know, you just have to be 37 years old, and he is 5. So in dog years, he's old enough.
Okay. Well, there you go.
So I did send him in, and he's the official candidate for the puppy party.
Right. Now, he may be the standard bearer of that party, because I'm not sure many of us are familiar with that party before this, so...
Yeah, so it's a new party, you know.
Yeah. okay,
and,
that's good.
His platform is a home for every dog and a bone for every dog.
Well, it's hard to argue that. Plus, it's catchy. So, again, I think I increasingly like Seven's chances. And as I mentioned in introducing you, I was struck by the fact that in this LA Times piece, that it was kind of this roundup of people who filed their papers in one form or another to run for presidency, that Seven was included. So he didn't seem like any more of a kind of kooky long shot than some of the other people, I guess, that were covered in the piece.
700 candidates.
Yeah.
That are running. Well, he actually not only was included, but he was in the sub headline.
Yeah. No, for sure. So, no, I think his media profile is rising rapidly. And as we know, that's critical to the whole thing. And
yes, we're really trying to get him on the Jimmy Kimmel Live show. I think, you know, more Americans need to know about him.
No doubt. Yeah. Because I guess really the prospect of Seven getting on one of the next debates in September probably seems very slim, those prospects.
Yeah. I think he's got to go a different route, like, you know, Jimmy Kimmel and stuff like that.
I got gotcha.
I have to say, he does covered a lot of the issues of today. One of the things that I think is really important is he promotes dogs, not guns. So right there, he's got my vote.
Right. Well, I think these days, in recent days in particular, I think would get a lot of people's votes. So, of course, we don't know his position on some other things, but just the fact that, you know, doesn't want animals to be homeless, wants a dog, every dog to have a bone, and is anti-gun, that's a pretty good platform right there.
Yeah. Well, he's also going to make all parks dog parks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, see?
Okay.
And he's dedicated to putting an end to homelessness and human poverty. So both.
Nice. Wow. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, the platform is sounding ever more attractive, so, well, that's cool. So, I believe, we're just about nearing the end of our time here, Susan, but I believe if people wanted to find out more about a Seven, or at least see various pictures of him, I guess that he has an Instagram page, is that
kind of... He has an Instagram page, which is Seven_4_president.
Yeah.
And he also has a website, which is love, LUVmy.dog.
Great.
So, they can check in either of those, and definitely share their support with others, and
sure.
let's get him to Washington at least to help the government work properly.
Okay, well, I'm all for that, and anything we can do to sort of build momentum and improve things in Washington, that sounds good to me. So, Susan, thank you so much. Give our best to Seven, and we'll keep a very close eye on the campaign as it further unfolds here.
Okay, thank you so much. Have a great day.
All right, you too. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Lori with Radioactivity, extending this three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, and news, and more, including, in the noon hour, Midpoint with Nola Lillet. Then at 1 p.m., the music kicks back in with the wonderful show Euro Radio, hosted by Paco Morales, flowing into Scott Elliott and his great All Souls edition of It's the Music at 2 p.m., and continuing, of course, into the evening and beyond with all kinds of great music. Meanwhile, on today's show, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering some sort of carefully selected trinket from the Talking Animals vault. So we are going to move into Name That Animal Tune. It's a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. And there will be a prize, as I say, something from our vast Talking Animals vaults of DVDs, books, all kinds of other shirts, things. Who knows? It could be anything great. To the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly, David, this animal's on. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
Gotta have a real need. Gotta sleep on your toes. And when you're on the street, you got to be able to pick out the easy meat with your eyes
All right, we'll take any guesses that might come in after we get off the air, because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. I invite you to visit talkinganimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there, too. There are also links to our Facebook page, our Instagram page, our Twitter feed, and more. So check all those out. Like us, follow us, as the case may be. And you can also subscribe to our newsletter to find out about other guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Trouse. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. It's Talking Animals on WNF Tampa, NPR News Headlines, and then Rob Lurie. Thanks.